You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, everybody. This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and once again today, we're going to talk to all the beat writers in the American League Central from MLB.com. And it's a division that's always changing every week. This week, the Minnesota Twins, the mighty Minnesota Twins, surged into second place, just behind those Kansas City Royals. We'll talk about Rhett Bollinger. We'll talk to Rhett Bollinger about that. And the Cleveland Indians have made a bit of a charge here after just an abysmal April. They had a really solid May, and Jason Kipnis has been a big part of that. We'll talk to Jordan Bastion about that. And we'll get the opinions of Jason Beck and Scott Merkin and Jeffrey Flanagan. Thank you all for tuning in. Here we go. Jason Beck is on the line with us. We're going to talk about a Tigers team that, Beck, I mean, this is the definition of up and down. In their last 12 games, Tigers have lost 3, won 3, lost 3, won 3. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's win-loss, win-loss. But whatever the case, very inconsistent team. They started out the season 11-2. They've gone 15-18 since. What is your sense of what the real Tigers team is, and what is the key to finding a more consistent bunch?
I think one of the keys is the starting pitching. If you look, I mean, the guys that they've had, the guys that – even some of the guys they were counting on at the front, you know, David Price and Anibal Sanchez included, they've had their hiccups here where, you know, they're either really good or they're getting knocked out pretty early, or they have a stretch where they go from just dominating to, you know, one next inning, they're getting shelled. You know, David Price has had that, although he's had that off and on all season. Anibal Sanchez certainly has had that. We've talked before about his growing problems with the home run ball, which came back to bite him against Houston. You know, Shane Green had an outing like that Monday in Oakland. Alfredo Simon, it's been a little bit up and down. Really, I mean, it's scary to think that for a good long stretch there, their most consistent starter was Kyle Lobstein. He's now on the DL, and we're talking about having to replace Kyle Lobstein in the Tigers' rotation, and it being a significant challenge for them.
It is, and we'll get a glimpse of another round of Buck Farmer in place of Kyle Lobstein. And a lot of this points to, you know, they felt that Verlander absence. And again, you don't know what you're going to get from Verlander this season, even if he had been healthy. But certainly, you'd feel a lot better about things if you had a healthy Verlander in there. What's the latest on his progression?
Well, he's throwing a simulated game Tuesday in Oakland. If that goes well, then they have to figure out a next step. Every expectation is that he's going to have to make a minor league rehab start somewhere, at least one start, maybe even more than that, given the fact that he's basically been shut down from game action for about 2 months. I know Verlander himself has said in the past that if he's ready to pitch in minor league game, he should be ready to pitch in a major league game. But I think when you're talking about this much time out, he's probably going to have to do it. And then from there, I think if assuming he comes through that okay, and if the arm responds well, and if the endurance is there, should be able to project a return for him, you know, early to mid June, I would think.
Well, that's better than nothing, but it's certainly they would like to have him back sooner than that. Obviously, when this first spring up in spring training. In the meantime, they really need Anibal Sanchez to step up, and you mentioned the issues there, and the big issue being 11 home runs already this season. How big of a concern is that right now?
It's becoming a growing concern. Even Brad Ausmus, who downplayed it for the longest time and who brushed off the spring training total, the 7 home runs in spring training, is kind of an anomaly for somebody who's working on pitches. Even he's clearly concerned now, and they're going to try to figure out what it is. If you look at the numbers, you know, the changeup has just become a way more hittable pitch for whatever reason. I know somebody told me that, the impression they're getting is that hitters are laying off the fastball now and waiting on the changeup. And the numbers against it are just I mean, they're scary how different they are. I think, you know, last year, now granted, it was a partial season for him last year, but I think it was like, you know, batting average off changeups, according to stats, was in like the 250s or something like that, and not much of a slugging percentage. And now I think the slugging percentage is, before last start, it was around close to 500, I think. And the batting average, I think, was 300 or maybe a little bit more than that, you know, when they put it in play. And that's a hard way for Anibal Sanchez to make a living and then get through an outing and try to get quality starts that way. If he doesn't have the off-speed pitch, he's basically having to survive on fastballs and cutters and splitters. And, you know, eventually, you know, that speed similarity just catches up with you. So, Jeff Jones is pretty well known for being able to work with guys on mechanics and pitches. You know, assuming it's a mechanical thing, I assume they'll be able to fix it in due time. It doesn't sound like he's sipping his pitches, but it's hard to tell these days because so many people are hesitant to say anything about stuff like that anymore.
Well, the rotation has had its inconsistencies, as you mentioned, back in the bullpen. Might have been way better than people would have expected, I think. But what's also holding this team back is the offense. It's just been up and down. I mean, we know it's capable of some big innings and some big nights, but they've also had a lot of nights with the two-run or less terrain. Is a lot of that – I mean, losing Victor's bat from the middle of the order is bound to catch up with you at some point. Is that a big factor in all this?
I think that is. I think it's taken some of the depth out of this lineup where, you know, and no offense to what, you know, they've tried to do filling in, because I do think Rajay Davis is, you know, is a good hitter in his own right who deserved more playing time. But, I mean, it's a different type of player than Victor Martinez. And Tyler Collins, for what he brings with the left-handed bat, is still Tyler Collins. You know, none of these guys are Victor Martinez. None of these guys have a track record. None of these guys have the ability to relax in clutch situations and deliver big hits. Even if he was scuffling along here, they were still that wherewithal, that presence that Victor brought. And you take that out of the lineup, that's hard to duplicate. You know, even with some of the guys they've been able to move up, I think it's a type of absence that requires a transition offensively, and I think you've started to see that a little bit where, you know, they're having to do a little bit more running, a little bit more putting guys in motion, and trying to manufacture a little bit more offense than they would previously.
What's the, V-Mart is rehabbing down in Orlando. Is there any prognosis or timetable for him coming back?
Nothing lately. I saw reports that said that, you know, all indications were that he'd have a minimal DL stay, but that's not the impression I've been getting. As soon as he went on the DL, the impression, you know, from people around here was that they were going to take their time on this. If it was something they thought 2 weeks on the DL was going to fix, they would have done it a while ago. This is something, simple rest isn't going to do it. You have to strengthen everything. Time isn't enough. You have to be able to strengthen the muscles around that knee, be able to kind of get everything stronger. You saw the swings where, you know, the knee looked weak. And when you're talking about that type of, you know, meniscus surgery, that's not something that's going to heal with simple rest. So I think the best they can do is go to work on strengthening everything around it so that there's less pressure on it and that you have an overall stronger joint.
We said going into the season back that because of some age and injury situations in the lineup and Victor coming off surgery being one of them, there would be a need for some young guys to step up. And Anthony Gose has been a great addition for them. But Nick Castellanos is a guy I think a lot of us targeted as a potential breakthrough or breakout candidate this year. Had a big night against the Brewers last week, but in terms of his overall performance, what have you seen from him? What are your expectations for him moving forward?
I see a guy who's struggling, you know, with being able to make adjustments to the way he's being pitched. He's showing better pitch recognition. He's shown some awfully good at-bats last week. You know, some pretty big ones at that, where he's been able to track pitches better than he did in 30 years, be able to foul off more, keeping himself alive in the count and waiting for that pitch that you can really do something with. But it's going to come in spurts. People forget, it's not just that he's in his second year of the league, it's that he's also still awfully young.
Yeah.
And he's still talking about a 22, 23-year-old kid who, you know, if not for the talent, you look at the age, and in a lot of situations, he'd still be in the minor leagues developing. But he just has so much talent, and the opening arose here that they were able to open a spot for him last year. This is part of the learning process, and they're going to have to deal with it. And they knew this coming in. I guess what you hope for with him is to be able to stay out of some of the bigger strikeouts and the double plays that have kind of been haunting this squad, and at least see more consistently good at-bats, even if the results aren't there at the end. And I think you see signs that that's on the horizon.
All right. Well, it's been a roller coaster ride for the Tigers here so far, and Beck has always done a great job describing the ride for us along the way. So I want to thank him for joining us. Beck, did you get your Brad Ausmus T-shirt yet?
You know what? I keep waiting for it. It hasn't arrived yet. I didn't get the tote bag either when that came out last year, though. So, yeah, I think I'm left off the mailing list.
Well, that's a shame. You got to get your hands on one of those. Joined, as always, by Jeffrey Flanagan. And, Jeffrey, the Royals had a rough day on Memorial Day, but hit the Memorial Day mark with the best record in the American League. And then, of course, Jeremy Guthrie had a really difficult day. And, you know, to me, that just kind of underscored the one question mark about this club. And we've talked about it before, is the starting rotation, and obviously been some developments since we last spoke about that. How big of a deal is this Danny Duffy injury? How significant do you think it is, or how long can the Royals expect to be without him, basically?
Well, we talked to him yesterday, and he did have a cortisone shot on Friday. And it just, as you know, just takes time for that stuff to be effective.
Right.
And he's going to just calm down. He was going to throw a side today and see how it feels. And they were able to backdate the DL move from 9 days ago. So he could technically be available, I believe, on Monday. I don't know if they'll rush him back that fast. He'll probably either throw a sim game this weekend or even pop over to Omaha and do a rehab start there. But I don't think they expect it to be long term. He suffered this a little bit last year at this time, and well, not at this time, it was later in the year.
Right.
And he had that infamous one pitch start at Yankee Stadium, and it was basically the same issue where he's got some soreness in that shoulder. The MRI has come back clean, so there's no structural damage. It's just kind of normal wear and tear. And I think they hope he'll be back within, you know, probably 7 to 10 days.
Well, yeah, and as you mentioned, dealt with it last year, dealing with it this year. You always worry about shoulders just being such a difficult area, you know, to get under wraps, and hopefully wish the best for him. And we talked about Guthrie has been up and down. You know, Yordano Ventura has certainly had his inconsistencies this season. And we just keep coming back to this guy, how big Chris Young has been for this club. That stealth signing during spring training. His opponents are getting on base just 14% of the time against him. And now they're really at a point where they need that to continue. It's not just this nice, you know, little silver lining at the back of the rotation. They really need that to continue for them in general.
Yeah, it's funny how things work out, isn't it? I mean, we're all worried about how is he going to stay in the rotation, you know, because you only got five guys. You can't go to a six-man rotation. Well, poof, just like that, you know, the Danny Duffy injury happens, and he's going to be out. You know, we think it's going to be a short time, but we don't know. So Chris Young stays in the rotation, which really is the best thing for everybody because he's been so phenomenal. You know, especially when Danny does come back, I mean, you're going to have to make a decision eventually, not just with the rotation, but someone's going to get bumped. You know, is it going to be Joe Blanton? Who's, you know, everyone's out of options, basically, so you can't make too many moves there by throwing guys into Omaha. So it's just a tough situation for them to be in. But, you know, thank God they've got Chris Young, and he's been a terrific starter. You know, I tend to think that, you know, Guthrie's spot could be vulnerable here in the next week or so because, you know, he's been largely ineffective this year. He had three pretty good starts, and then yesterday was just historically bad, one of the worst starts in the history of baseball. So how much more can they tolerate that? He's in the last year of his contract. The start by Vargas tonight is a huge start for him because he has not been sharp this year. So, I mean, he's another guy, unfortunately. They're tied into a long-term deal with him. He got two more years after this, and he's not an effective guy out of the bullpen necessarily. So this is a big start for Vargas tonight. They really need him to step up and give them, you know, at least five, maybe six, and then they were going to piggyback Joe Blanton with them. But, yeah, as we talk almost every week, there's questions about the rotation. But, you know, they do have a couple of solid guys, Volquez and Young, and Ventura, you know, his starts are so unusual. He'll look like the best pitcher in baseball for five innings and then just make a couple of middle mistakes, and the next thing you know, he's given up four runs over seven innings or five runs. And I think maybe that's just something he'll grow out of, and he'll just learn to focus more each inning. So I think they're set with, obviously, with those three guys in the rotation, and then the last two spots, who knows. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, Ventura, I mean, you see that a lot with young guys with electric stuff. They can drive you nuts because you know it's in there.
Yeah.
You see them so dominant at times, but the consistency is not a strength. So, yeah, what Volquez has done for them has been huge. What Young has done for them has been huge. And I'm curious, Jeffrey, Brandon Finnegan, we're just so interested in this guy in general because of his, you know, meteoric rise up to the big league last year and pitch some meaningful innings for them down the stretch. And obviously they want to stretch him out as a starter this season, but he's been back and forth between the minors and the big leagues and back and forth between the minor league rotation and the big league bullpen. Do you think they'll get to a point with him where they just, you know, leave him to really stretch out and to be an option for them in this rotation?
I don't, actually. I think they're going to go just the opposite. I think he's been on a pitch limit wherever he's been, to 40 to 60 pitches. Even when he's been at Omaha and Double A, he's been on that pitch limit. And the reasoning is that he threw so many innings last year between college, the minors, you know, with the Royals in September, October. So many times he got up in the bullpen. His arm really took a beating last year, and they want to keep, you know, calm that situation down because they want him available for them in September and October this year. And so they want to keep his innings down, keep his pitch count down. And you can't do that if you're being stretched out as a starter. So I think what you saw from him yesterday, the three very clean innings, you know, he was really on top of his game. That's exactly what they want from him for the rest of the year. Just focus on two or three inning stints, you know, throw as hard as you can for those short bursts, and forget about being a starter this year. Now, next year is a different story, you know, with Guthrie coming off the payroll. Chris Young was on a one-year deal. So, you know, there'll be more question marks there. Maybe they can stretch him out in spring. But this year, they're just going to kind of calm that situation down with him and just, you know, keep him at 40 to 60 pitches and so he can be an effective part of the bullpen come September and October.
Yeah. Well, hey, maybe the Royals are one of those clubs that go out and get into the starters market this summer, depending on how things play out, especially with Duffy, as you mentioned, being a big key for them, his health. But another injury report watch kind of guy is Alex Rios, and he's
remember him?
Yeah. What's the latest with him, Jeffrey?
Well, he's in Omaha right now. They're playing a four-game home series, I think, with Tacoma, and they expect him possibly back with the big league club by Friday, which would be a very pleasant surprise and welcome for them because they've not gotten very much production at all out of that right field platoon between Orlando and Dyson. Orlando's been—he's played well and he's hit okay. He's cooled off after, you know, the Mr. Triples April that he had, but you know, because the league caught up with him. And but he's fine. He's been playing very well. And the shame of it is, he's probably going to be the guy who's got to go out because he does have options left. He's outplayed Jerod Dyson by a ton in right field, but you know, you just can't expose Dyson to the waiver wire or anything like that.
Right.
So. It's going to be Orlando who's probably going to get, and it's unfair, but he's going to be the one who's going to go out. And the Royals, though, will really welcome Rios back and his power production, his capability of hitting, you know, and getting on base in the 3-350 range. They're going to going to finally get some offense out of that spot. That makes that lineup look even more powerful when you can put him into the seventh or sixth or seventh spot and push everyone else down. It becomes just a dynamic order when he's in there. We saw that for seven games when they were 7-0, and then he got hurt. Haven't seen him since, so I think they're anxious to get him back.
Absolutely, yeah. Right field production has been an issue for them. Not an issue in left field and center field. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Jeffrey.
Uh-huh.
You got an All-Star game ballot in front of you. You're only allowed to vote for one Royals outfielder. You go Alex Gordon or Lorenzo Cain at this point?
Oh, boy. I'd probably... I don't know. It's hard not to vote. You know, it's hard to vote against Alex Gordon just because of what he means to this team all around. Yeah. He's got more power potential. You know, Lorenzo's the more dynamic, you know, ESPN type catches. Although Alex makes those too, so
he's made a couple this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why he's won four straight Gold Gloves. So right. I'd have to lean toward Alex. Lorenzo's has hit really well this year. He's been a little bit of a funk the last couple of weeks. Gun to my head this moment, I'd probably go with Alex.
All right. Yeah, I'd probably go with Alex Gordon as well. Reputation precedes him, and obviously the numbers stack up pretty well pound for pound. But maybe we'll see both of those guys. I think the Royals, Jeff, are going to be well represented on that Midsummer Classic stage this year.
Well, they sure should be. I mean, you can go around the diamond and just about everybody, you know, why not Mike Moustakas with the kind of year he's having, and Eric Hosmer, and you mentioned Kane, and Eskie's having a phenomenal year. Sal Perez is having a phenomenal year. I mean, they should just light up the ballot, I would think.
Interesting stat on Moustakas, just while you mentioned him, because I just had this written down, a .611 on-base percentage when leading off an inning the past month. He's been a big spark plug for them all year, and that just kind of illustrates that. And Royals are a lot of fun to watch, and we'll see how the rotation all comes together in the long range. But for now, I want to thank Jeffrey Flanagan for joining us. I am joined by Rhett Bollinger, as always. And, you know, some things in sports just can't quite be explained very easily. The Minnesota Twins of 2015 are just that. They are eight games, as we record this, they are eight games over .500 for the first time since 2010. And it's not a team that's had, you know, crazy starts from certain individuals. They don't have anybody batting over .300. They don't have any dominant arm in that rotation. But it's just been a very solid, clutch club. And, Rhett, you've been covering these guys all year, obviously. There must be so much confidence in that clubhouse right now, just the way this team has come through in the clutch on both sides, pitching and for the offense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like you're talking about the clutch stuff, I mean, I think they're third in the majors right now and hitting with runners in scoring position. I know their bullpen so far has been pretty lights out for, you know, bullpen doesn't strike very many guys out. They're going Perkins has been perfect in save opportunities. Blaine Boyer's kind of emerged as one of the better setup men in the game somehow from a kind of a struggling or kind of struggled early in the year and kind of got better from there. And yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where the pitching's kind of been kind of middle of the road, but when you have an offense that ranks, you know, in the top seven in runs scored, you kind of mix that with, you know, a decent pitching staff and a team that's kind of just getting the gun in clutch situations. And all of a sudden now you've got a team that's kind of putting it all together for the first time in, you know, since 2010. So it's been fun to watch. It's been kind of one of those things we don't really know how long you can kind of keep up in terms of some of the clutch situations. But like you said, there's no one guy kind of dominating. There's no hitters kind of hitting above their heads. Even maybe pitching-wise, I don't know if Gibson or if Pelfrey can keep it up to this extent. But in general, though, it kind of looks like it's in some ways, you know, once everyone kind of comes back to earth in terms of their runners in scoring position, I think it still can be somewhat sustainable going forward. I'm kind of curious to see how it goes. Obviously, we're only a quarter of the way through the season. It's been a big surprise. But so far, obviously, they keep playing pretty well. Every series kind of winning. I think they've won seven of the last eight series. So they just keep winning.
They do. And, you know, offensively, they just don't draw many walks. But then on the pitching side, they just don't give up many walks. So I guess those two things help counteract each other in some way. But, yeah, just an interesting group in general. It's hard to – you just can't pick out a superstar, and that's what makes it such a fun team to watch. Rhett, this team just doesn't lose when leading after five innings. I think they have one loss when leading after five innings, unless I'm mistaken. And, of course, Glenn Perkins has been a huge part of that. Had the minor injury issue in spring training, and his stuff did not look entirely sharp right when the season started. But, you know, you look up now after Memorial Day, he's 16 for 16 in saves, and just been a lockdown arm in the back end of that bullpen.
Yeah, the bullpen in general, as you talked about, really has been only that one loss after five innings. And really, Perkins' only struggle really was in Kansas City. They brought him in the eighth inning, and Moustakas kind of blooped one to left, and he blew the save. Or sorry, didn't blow the save, but got the loss on that one. But it was just a bloop shot in the left. So
yeah.
One of the things with the bullpen just has been getting it done, you know, day in, day out. Like I said, Boyer's been a big part of that. Aaron Thompson's been a surprise there. And they kind of get it done, too, without Casey Fien, who's really their top center reliever. He'll be back probably late this weekend, maybe early next week. Once he's kind of back in that mix, it'll definitely be interesting to see if the bullpen can keep it up. That's definitely a major reason for the success so far this season.
Yeah, Thompson and Boyer have been huge for them. Casey Fien will be a nice injection for them. But another potential option, I'm not sure. I don't know if anybody is at this point, but Alex Meyer has been converted to relief work down in AAA under the pretense that this will help get him straightened out when he does return to starting. But you do have to wonder, Rhett, about that move. This is a guy with, you know, raw strikeout stuff, could be a nice weapon in a relief role. And you don't want to give up on him as a starter at this point, I'm sure, but it has to be somewhat tempting to see what you have there as a reliever, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a guy that can throw, you know, close to 100 miles per hour, a good slider. Still kind of working on that changeup at the third pitch. I think that's probably why he struggled a little bit as a starter. Part of it's just been the command and all that, too. And I think the other thing, too, is his arm slot right now has kind of dropped a little bit this year. The Twins are trying to work with him to kind of get him over the top a little bit more, because, I mean, as a 6'9" guy, he can fix that arm slot, obviously, get more ground balls to go along with the strikeout stuff that he has. And you're kind of right, Tim. It's kind of curious to see if he can stick as a reliever for the long term. Twins keep saying it's going to be a short-term thing. It's kind of get him back on track. He made his first relief appearance the other night because it's still a scoreless inning. So a good sign, didn't walk anybody in that inning. That's kind of been the big problem for him so far this year. He just saw the walk. So I'm curious to see if he's going to make it to the majors this year as a reliever, if he can kind of dominate at AAA as a reliever. But I do think that in the long term, they would like him to go back to starting for sure. We've seen a lot of other teams. The White Sox are pretty famous for having their top prospects come up as relievers right away. We saw it with Chris Sale. We saw it with Carlos Rodon right now. So I think that it's not like a thing that, you know, teams haven't done in the past, but with the struggles he had so far starting this year, I'm kind of curious to see if they go back to that. But I think the Twins ideally would obviously get more value as a starter, and if he can kind of keep that, you know, delivery, you know, the whole time throughout his, you know, 6-7 innings and throw as hard as he does, he could be kind of an ace-like guy. But so far this season, it just hasn't really happened. I think right now it's kind of a confidence thing, too. I think they're hoping that if he goes to the bullpen, racks up some strikeouts there and kind of cuts down on that walk rate, and get his confidence up. Maybe this year he'll stick around as a reliever, and then maybe next year they can convert him back to a starter.
It would be nice to see that kind of arm on this staff in that bullpen. I mean, the Twins, that's their thing, man. They don't strike out many people, but as I said, they don't walk many people either. So it's just an interesting club. It's not a conventional club by any means. They're not overpowering people, but there has to be a great deal of confidence, you know, starting staff-wise and offensively, when you do have a bullpen that's been this consistent at locking down those late leads.
Yeah, definitely. The big thing, too, I mean, it's nice to have a guy like Torrey Hunter around, a guy who's been there, kind of a leader, kind of had a calming influence. Him and Paul Mauder and even Eddie Guardado as a bullpen coach, guys that have been around and done this, you know, Twins falling out of that chute, you know, going 1-6, it would have been easy for them to kind of go back into a shell like they had the last couple years where they, you know, struggled those last 4 years. Thinking, uh-oh, here we go again, but they've kind of been able to bounce back from that and never really panicked and have that kind of bullpen. Like I said, it's not conventional. Strikeouts aren't really there. And I guess if you can bring up a guy like Meyer later in the year, and they have a couple guys, too. You know, in AAA, they're doing pretty well. Lester Oliveros is having a nice year there. And AA, they've got some big prospects they just drafted recently. And Nick Birdie and Jake Reed, who can throw, both can throw right around 100 miles per hour. So they have some power arms in their system, some guys that maybe could come up later in the summer or at least, you know, maybe next year. So the makings of a good bullpen in terms of strikeout stuff is there in the future. But right now, they're somehow getting it done with guys that aren't really striking many guys out. Like you said, the walks are down. And so far, yeah, it's all the guys have been kind of counting on getting the job done. Even the Rule 5 guy, J.R. Graham, who throws in the high 90s, came in against Pittsburgh and threw three scoreless innings to keep the game going to the 13th with Mauer one with the home run. So it's one of those things, they're getting unexpected performances from all sorts of guys in the bullpen. And so far, it's been a good formula for their success.
And because they don't get many strikeouts on this staff, that puts more emphasis on what they do defensively. And that's another thing that stood out, is the outfield defense has been much improved. We see Aaron Hicks, it seems like every other night there's some highlight reel catch from him. He hasn't hit very much, but he's contributed a lot defensively. They cycled through a lot of different outfielders this year. But and of course, Torrey Hunter at this age and this stage of his career is not the dynamic defender he once was. But it's certainly noticeable they've been better in that department.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Hicks has been great in center field since he came back up. Even Shane Robinson as a backup has been really good in corner outfield and in center field. Schaefer was okay, made a couple nice plays, but for the most part, I think he was hampered by his knee injury and kind of didn't really allow him to get too many balls. But Hicks has been great in center, and having Rosario up here since Arcia's injuries helped the defense, because Arcia obviously is a big power candidate, hit 20 home runs last year, and he'll be back pretty soon too, but not really known for his outfield defense. So I think with him kind of out, it's helped to have some more athletic guys like Rosario in left, and even some like Eduardo Escobar out there and Robinson. And Hunter's been fine. I mean, Hunter, I think if you look at some of the advanced metrics, he's been slightly below average, but he hasn't been. Everyone acts like he's going to be a major liability in right, and he really hasn't been. He's been fine. He's been a little worse than league average, but he still gets the balls he can get to, throws to the right base for the most part. So he really hasn't been an issue in right at all, and obviously, offensively, he's been kind of the best player to be on this team this month. So it's one of those things where the defense in the outfield definitely was a concern. So far, it's been pretty average for the most part, which is better than expected in a sense. And the infield defense has been pretty solid all around. I mean, Danny Santana is the only one who's really maybe struggled defensively in the infield because, Maurer and Plouffe and Dozier have all been pretty solid, which is kind of why I think if you look at the pitching stats, guys like Pelfrey and Gibson are having great starts of the year because they have a pretty good infield defense, whereas guys like, Nolasco and Hughes that are more fly ball pitchers have a little bit higher ERAs than usual because the outfield defense isn't as good as the infield defense at this point.
Right. Well, you mentioned Nolasco, and one last thing there, Rhett. He picks up his 100th win on Memorial Day, 100th career win. His last three starts, 2.41 ERA. Any sense that he's kind of turning a corner performance-wise?
Yeah, definitely. And I think he's won the last five starts. I think a lot of it's been due to the offense helping him out there. I think they've scored at least five runs in each of his five starts. But his ERA, even over those five starts this month, since the elbow injury, is about 3.77. So it's not anything, otherworldly, but if he can even do it the rest of the year, if he's a guy that can have an ERA in the high threes with that kind of offense, he'll do fine. That's the biggest thing. I think last year, for as bad as he was, I don't think he's that bad of a pitcher, obviously. He's a guy with a track record. I think right now he's kind of turning it around and had a great start there against a good Red Sox lineup, throwing eight innings or almost 7 2/3, pitching into the eighth inning for the first time this season. So that was a good sign because even though he was picking up the wins, he's kind of going 5 1/3, 5 2/3, and finally kind of got over that hump in his last start. If he can kind of keep that going, that'll be huge for this pitching staff.
We are here again at the Progressive Field Dining Room, myself and Jordan Bastian, our favorite place to meet and do podcasts.
Yeah, this is great. We had some good fajitas on Memorial Day today.
Nothing says celebrate America like bad Mexican food.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It was good. I'm always going to be the optimist here. It was okay. We'll go with okay. But not what I was expecting on Memorial Day.
No, not what you'd expect. But
we'll grill later.
Listen to this. You also wouldn't expect the Indians to get this hot based on what we saw the first month plus of the
nice
season.
Nice segue.
Thank you very much.
That's why you're a pro.
You, Jordan Bastian, have been off for a week plus.
Mm-hmm.
You have been taking care of business at home, not writing up your daily reports on the tribe, and lo and behold, the Indians get hot. So I guess
it was me.
First thing is to say thank you for not showing up for a while.
Right.
And the next thing is, what do you think of what's going on here? Is this more the team you expected to see?
I think so, mainly because we're seeing, not that we didn't really see a lot of great starting pitching early on, but it was definitely some inconsistency there, and I think the starting rotation, from what I've gathered during my staycation, the starting pitching's really been taking off. Kluber's pitching like Kluber again, since that unreal 18 strikeout game. He's been pretty incredible and steady, and Trevor Bauer's been steady, and Salazar's looked strong, and all of a sudden low run support holds up a little bit. But that said, the offense has been coming around in May, I think near the middle to upper third of the MLB leaderboard in a lot of categories this month. A lot of that's because of the move of Jason Kipnis to the top and Michael Brantley doing his thing. So it's been good to see this team kind of coming together more of what we expected. I think what will be interesting to see is if this long stretch of good starting pitching kind of has provided a little bit of a respite for that bullpen,
right,
which got worn out so early and was kind of a big problem. And so hopefully going forward, this great stretch here of starting pitching can benefit the bullpen in the coming weeks, month.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I say this is the team we expected to see because we expected to see a team guided by its starting pitching,
right,
which has, of course, been excellent. And you see there does seem to be more confidence in that lineup that, you know, they're going to get those starts consistently. And, you know, it's not the exact rotation we expected to see. With Sean Markham, for instance, pitching today. But, you know, they've had that pass the baton kind of feel to them for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, they lose Gavin Floyd and kind of had some issues with that fifth spot. But maybe Sean Markham can come in and give them kind of what they hope to get from Gavin Floyd, be that the performance on the mound or that veteran presence in the clubhouse, a guy that's been through the gauntlet of the AL East when it was a much stronger division than it seems to be now. You know, and he pitched pretty well for the Blue Jays back then. So we'll see what he can give. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to blow you away on the radar gun or anything like that, but can hopefully solidify the back end just on experience alone, knowing how to pitch, as they say. But yeah, it's been good to see some of those things turn around for this team. And I think the return of Yan Gomes will be a big plus for this pitching staff. I think just seeing him in that dugout, in the lineup, and behind the plate, just that alone can be a lift for this team.
Yeah, being around here pregame pretty frequently and watching Gomes' progression, very early on you got the sense that this was going to be on the early side of the 6 to 8 week, the original timetable they gave. He was doing a lot of work very quickly, more than you'd expect for an injury that significant.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that just speaks to his character.
Yeah,
this is a guy that I think we saw from the moment he was called up. You know, Carlos Santana was pretty entrenched, and he worked hard and ran away with the starting role, and a guy that maybe in Toronto felt, you know, maybe he came out of Toronto with a chip on his shoulder, but since we've seen him here in Cleveland, it's been a very take-charge mentality, both of the pitching staff, of his hitting, and of his work behind the scenes. You know, I think you saw some of those attributes contributing to the Indians investing in him over that long-term deal. So I think everything we saw from him when he was active, we also saw it throughout that rehab. And yeah, I mean, considering the nature of the injury, you know, I think it was a little surprising to see how hard he was pushing, but then you could see all that work he put in was paying off because he was bouncing back strong, and I think got here faster than anybody had expected. And I didn't expect him to be catching his first game back. I thought they'd ease him in with some DH games.
Right.
They threw him right in there, and, you know, Bauer pitched great. Indians got that win, and, you know, he goes 0-for-4. But, again, I think you still can see the impact he has behind the plate, in the dugout, and just knowing that threat of another right-handed bat is in that lineup is good for this team.
And it seems like the only thing left to be seen is what can he tolerate from a workload standpoint, you know, how many days in a row and how often does. But that's one of the things where Terry Francona has been strongest with this in his time here in Cleveland is rotating guys and giving them the time when they need it. You know, you look at there's not much durability in today's game in general. Nobody's playing 162 anymore, but this team has been especially proactive at making sure guys get the rest when they need, and I'm sure that'll be the case going forward with Gomes.
Yeah, and I mean, he's had to do that, the mixing and matching to this point, not only because of Gomes, but Lonnie Chisenhall has struggled, and he's a left-handed hitter, and then at shortstop, you've had Jose Ramirez going up and down, and almost as a switch hitter, you know, he's been better from one side and not as great from the other, so you're trying to mix in Mike Avila's at short and at third, and then Avila's had to take time off for his family, and it's just there's been so many factors. Michael Bourne, the struggles out of the gates. He was benched for a while, and you know, so I think you got to, again, tip your cap to Tito for, you know, mixing and matching, trying to squeeze as much out as he can of this lineup and this group, because, I mean, that's what this Cleveland team has to do, because they don't have that one thumper in the middle that's going to just, you know, put the lineup on his shoulders and carry the team, although, you know, we've seen Kipnis try to do that in the month of May. I think Francona deserves a lot of credit for getting the most out of what he's had to work with over not just this season, but the last two.
Pending player of the month, right? Jason Kipnis. He's got to be player of the month.
I mean, I would think so. He was player of the month when he hit 419. What's he hitting this month? 460?
456 at the moment.
Oh, it's down to 456. He's slumping.
He hasn't had an inning off so far this season.
No. I mean, he's been incredible. And I think, again, I mean, he went through a little bit of a funk out of the gates, and everyone was starting to wonder what was going on. And we saw it in that June of 2013. I mean, when he gets on a hot streak, he can turn a hot month into a good season. You know what I mean? And I think we're seeing that right now. And it came, obviously, at the right time because this team really needed some sort of boost, especially offensively. And, you know, I think moving him, I think we talked about this before, you know, we saw it with Chu when they moved him to the leadoff spot a couple years ago. You know, all of a sudden he took off. I think we're seeing a little bit of the similarities there with Kipnis setting the tone. And we haven't really seen Santana thrive in that number two spot. But obviously, I like that combination of Kipnis, Santana, and Brantley, the top three.
I actually know the secret to Jason Kipnis's. Well, I don't know if it's been going on all month, but I know I have good authority here.
Got good intel?
I got good intel.
Okay.
Saturday, he had the game-winning hit to back Corey Kluber against the Reds.
Right.
And I happen to know, I don't know if I should be revealing this on the podcast. I don't know if I'm revealing any inside baseball here, but
breaking news.
I happen to know that Jason Kipnis had breakfast at the original Pancake House that morning.
That morning.
And when he came up to bat, I said to the people I'm watching the game with, I said, he's about to get a big hit here because he's got pancake power.
Pancake power.
And then he delivered the double.
It's all in the batter. Oh, man. On that note.
But there's just another plug. There's another company that should be
sponsored
this podcast.
Not sponsored by Pancake.
The original Pancake House. And got to go to the original. Don't go to any of the knockoffs, which I don't even know what they are. Well, I do. Waffle House does pancakes too, right? Can you get pancakes at the Waffle House?
You know, when I'm in spring, I'm a Black Bear Diner guy. I don't go to the Waffle House.
I'm just not a breakfast guy in general. I like a bowl of
Special I can't believe
K
I do this podcast with you.
Yeah. All right, what else do you want to talk about, Jordan? You've been gone a long time. Do you feel like caught up? Do you feel like you know what's going on around
here? I mean, that first game back is always, I mean, you remember what it was like on the beat, man. If you take one day off,
right,
you return and you feel lost. I had 10 days off, which is extremely rare during the season. I had text messages, people asking me if I retired. Tito asked me if I had quit. I think I was just doing my part trying to get this team going. You know, I thought maybe it was my face in that clubhouse that was, you know, maybe I was the cancer.
Yeah.
So I left, you know, but I brought the family to the game on Sunday. So I was in the stands and they won. I wanted to ease myself back into it.
Yeah.
I was in attendance. I was there.
Yeah.
So they won with me back. So I thought, okay, it's good. I can return now. You know, they can't blame me.
Right. Right. It's a good thing when you bring the family and, and you have a good experience.
Right.
I got to bring my 5-month-old daughter to her first game, and they played in 2.5 hours, and they won, and I think that's going to instill fanship in her, even though...
She lasted the whole game?
She lasted, until the exact last out, and then she started to just cry uncontrollably. She was hungry. So, good timing for the Tribe with that win, and, you know, it's been a good time here lately. The division, it seemed like it could get away from them very quickly this season, and who knows, maybe it has. Maybe this is too little too late in that regard, but I will say that the Tigers have shown some vulnerability with their offense, that the Royals have some definite vulnerability in their starting rotation right now. So who knows, maybe it's... maybe they're on the rise here. What do you think?
I mean, beginning of the year, everyone kind of just basically named 4 teams in the Central and forgot about the Twins.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's going to be a 4-team race. Those upstart White Sox and the Royals and Tigers and the Indians are on Sports Illustrated. And, oh, yeah, there's that other team there, too. And they're in, what, second place right now? The Twins?
Yeah, I believe either
the Twins are for real or this division is far from unsettled. And I think I lean towards the latter. In that regard, I think we're at what game 44 ish.
We are game 44, game number 22.
44 games in. I mean, 40 games is usually the barometer where you look at and say, "This is kind of what we have."
Yeah.
So now you can start looking at the team stats and maybe making projections about what they should do at the trade deadline, things like that. But you know, I think we're 40 games in, and this is almost a 500 club. And we're starting to see signs of late of what we expected to see So I think this is far from over. I don't know if the Indians are going to end up with the division, but they're still, I mean, again, we're talking 40 games, and they're within earshot of the wild card. You know, not that you should focus there, but I think it's far, far too early to write this team off.
Absolutely. And I want to thank Jordan Bashan for doing this live from the Progressive Field dining room, where they're not serving pancakes.
It's all in the batter.
It's all in the batter.
Good slogan.
We have our best and worst joke of this podcast's brief history.
Boy, does this guy come to play. Scott Merkin's on vacation this week, but he's still doing our lovely podcast because it just wouldn't be the same without you, Merk. Merk, how are you going to spend your vacation?
Yeah, I'm just staying in Chicago and doing some fun things. I got to give a shout-out. I went to see my 8-year-old nephew, Brett, play in a Little League All-Star game yesterday, and he had 3 hits. How about that? And he made a nice catch at second base. So I'm watching some good baseball yesterday in the suburbs of Chicago.
Good for you. And the White Sox would kill to have a guy who could get 3 hits.
Yeah,
how about that?
They've gone 3 games without getting 3 hits from someone, I think.
I think you're right. They've lost 6 of their last 7. Just when we thought they were on the verge of really taking off, they went right backwards again. Scored 13 runs total in those 7 games. And, boy, I mean, it's really been the story all season. The offense just isn't there, Merk. If you would have told me they'd have the worst offense in baseball after Memorial Day going into the season, I would have been shocked. First of all, I would have known how you would know that information, because that's impossible to know before the year. But that's where we're at, Merk.
Not that good. That's how I would know it. But, it's strange. I mean, it really is, because you look at these guys on the team and you don't think, you know, maybe some guys adjust a little bit as they, you know, gain another year in baseball and that kind of thing, but you wouldn't think they'd drop off this precipitously. And you know, they played a few less games than other teams because of the Baltimore civil unrest, which is going to be made up on Thursday, the doubleheader.
Right.
And then, you know, they have another game against Kansas City that's being made up in July, the weekend of the 10-year World Series reunion. But still, to be the, you know, the last I checked, the last team in baseball on extra base hits at U.S. Cellular Field, of all places.
Right.
And granted, they've played more road games. They have a lot of home games coming in July and August, I think 32 in total, including 18 in August. But it's just strange. It's strange that they're also near the bottom in pitch per plate appearance. So you would think that, you know, if they're free swingers, they're probably big power hitters, right? I mean, although there are plenty of power hitters who, you know, Barry Bonds comes to mind, or Abreu's got a good eye up there. You know, you can name a bunch of them. But you would think with them not seeing a lot of pitches, they'd be swinging and trying to rip it somewhere. And so it's just a weird combination that they're not hitting for any power, they're not seeing a lot of pitches, and they're just not a good offensive team. Let's cut to the chase. As of right now, what are we, 42 games in? They're not a good baseball team. There's no way to hide it. They're just not a very good baseball team at this point.
No, and that's an interesting note on the pitchers per plate appearance. It's, there is a lot of discussion in the game today about the value of being more of a free-swinging team, just knowing the way bullpens are built and pitchers trying to establish those first pitch strikes and seizing upon them. The Royals do that very well. They're an aggressive team, but obviously much different results as far as production goes this season. And
well, I'll tell you, that's something that Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn talk a lot about, and they talked a lot about it during, you know, the championship year in 2005 and the great 2008 year where they won in the blackout game to get to the playoffs,
yeah.
Where, you know, the key is, to even if you don't knock that starting pitcher out early in the first couple innings, the key is, you know, getting that pitch count up. Like you said, you know, no team in baseball really is probably completely satisfied with what they have in middle relief. You know, a lot of teams like what they have in 7, 8, 9, that type of thing. But the goal for, you know, this is not germane just to the Sox, obviously. It works on any team. But, you know, get that starting pitch count up high, try and get him out after 5 innings, and then take advantage there. And another thing the Sox haven't done very well this year, they've been outscored 38-13 in the first inning. And I know in 2005, that was just the trademark of that team, is that,
right.
You know, and let's face it, 2005 was a special team. 2005 is one of the more underrated championship teams in baseball history, in my opinion. But they'd get a lead, and, you know, early in the game, and they just make it last. You know, the starting pitching was exceptional. They had a great bullpen, even though they went through 3 closers that year. But that's one thing this team has not done this year. They played from behind quite a bit this year, as evidenced by the 38-13 first inning number.
And then on top of all that, Merk, Avisiel Garcia comes out of the game on Memorial Day with a knee inflammation. He's been their most consistent hitter this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can always put Jose Abreu, obviously, in the All-Star talk, but I think if you're talking All-Stars, I mean, Avi Sayo has been the most, like you said, the most consistent player. And that's, it's, you know, a little worrisome. I'm not a doctor, nor have I ever played one on TV. I don't know if people will get that joke. I was a little bit older. But, you know, he's come out of games, I think, three times now, and he's missed a couple of days. And they, you know, they say right. that MRIs have been done. They didn't say MRIs have been done, but they said it's been checked out and that there's no structural damage. It's just inflammation and soreness. But you kind of wonder, again, I'm not there with him in Toronto, but you wonder if at some point you say, maybe this is a DL stint. Maybe this is just, let's see if, you know, 2 weeks of solid rest really helps cure this thing, because he's way too valuable of a guy to have him play at 50% and then have him go out there and play 50% and maybe hurt it worse and then lead to something that costs him the season. They're not going to win without Avisaíl García in that lineup. I mean, I feel pretty comfortable saying that. I realize they have other good hitters. They have some, you know, solid pitchers, a good closer. But you need García. You need him. I mean, he made a difference last year being gone. You know, I think that team probably would have been a little better than the 73 wins with him playing for more than just, you know, the last month and a half of the season. So you wonder if eventually the Sox will just err on the side of caution. I know García wants to be out there. He's told us he doesn't. He didn't. It's not come to the Sox to be in the trainer's room. No one has. But at some point, you just got to say, okay, this is not, you know, this is not healing with what we're doing. So maybe just complete rest, as they did with Abreu last year, and it worked wonders. He was hobbling around in Houston around this time last year with a bad ankle. Put him on the DL. He came back and he just, you know, lit it up after that.
Getting away from the offense for a sec, Merck, Chris Sale's slider usage is definitely different than it's been in years past. What's been your take on that and what's going on with that pitch?
Well, I think he's really focused on, you know, commanding the fastball, but, you know, the slider usage cut it down a little bit, probably, you know, prolongs his career and makes him, you know, healthier or stronger, I would think. Okay. I think the last we checked, our outstanding associate reporter, Greg Garneau, wrote a story about this Saturday. Saturday he started in the Paul Konerko day. Right, I think per Fangraphs, his slider percentage is like 10% of his pitches this year, which is far and away the lowest of his fourth year as a starting pitcher. So, you know, it's interesting. And the other interesting point, I think, and now granted, this was built up already for Carlos Rodon, that he was not going to go every fifth day from now until the end of the season. But I don't know if it's coincidence, no one's really said, that his last start he threw 29 sliders, and now he's getting this, you know, extended rest to break a little bit. So, you know, it may tie in together. I know when he did that during spring training, where he struck out 9 against the Royals, but I know they said, you know, that's not going to be his way all season. It just can't be. You're not your arm. And he understands that. Carlos gets it, and so does Chris. Your arm's just not going to hold up if you continue to throw, you know, an abundance of sliders every game. You got to work on other stuff. But Chris is still pretty darn good. He had two poorly located fastballs, which he said, and he struck out 10 guys against a really surprisingly solid Minnesota team. You know, I mean, give them credit. They've had a great start, but aside from that, he's still, you know, a number one caliber guy, just going about it a different way this year.
You mentioned the Paul Konerko ceremony the other day. What was your takeaway from that? It seems like we had a lot of opportunity to celebrate Konerko, obviously, at the end of last year, but here was a chance to formally retire that number. And what did you take away from that experience?
It'd be interesting to see the Sox get back to the playoffs again, because they put on good shows there. I mean, they did a great, phenomenal job with Konerko's retirement the night before the last night of the season last year. And then this was outstanding. And this was like even a more relaxed Paul Konerko, because Paul is one of those guys who has so much respect for the game that on that Saturday night they did it in the second game end of the year. He probably was like, you know, geez, I'm holding up Kansas City. Let's get this over with. And you know, he acknowledged Minnesota and his age peer, Torrey Hunter, who I think is 6 months older than Paul and has 30 RBIs this year. He was up there in the dugout watching. But I thought about, I mean, a real interesting point that Paul made was that he applauded the Sox for, and this is not a personal thing, because anyone who knows Paul, that, you know, individual stuff is like last on his list. But he applauded the Sox for, you know, allowing his number to retire when his family was around and everyone was healthy and there to watch it and enjoy it. And he made an interesting, you know, assertion that if you retire and your numbers are good, then why not? He said he hopes more baseball teams do it. Why not retire the number right away? You know, why would you wait 5 years if you knew right away that this guy is going to have a number retired? You know, I don't know if there's certain parameters in baseball we don't know about, but he made a lot of sense. He made a lot of sense. And he was, you know, 16 years on that team. You don't see that much anymore. And so valuable to the team. Just, you know, in great speech. He had a great moment. He's got a real dry sense of humor. And at one point near the end, his mic cut out, and he was looking around trying to, you know, get it fixed. And he kind of turned first to the bench to Mark Parent and said, "Is it like the Oscars? That's it? I've been played off?" And they're like, "No, we're fixing it." So they fixed it. The mic came back up, and he grabbed the mic, and he goes, and that's how I figured out the meaning of life. And everyone kind of laughed at that. And that's just typical Konerko, you know. But it was a great speech, recognized everyone. And really, I mean, I will tell you that I got there, whatever, 11 o'clock that morning for, you know, clubhouse open at 11:30, and it was already packed. I mean, the C lot was pretty much two-thirds full, and 38,000 people. Brooks Boyer told me they had 33,000 people in the ballpark by 2:30 for a 3:10, what ended up being a 3:40 first pitch. Really just a great day overall.
All those years interviewing Konerko, we never thought to ask him the meaning of life. That's an opportunity missed right there. And, Merck, you're missing an 11-game road trip. What is it, 11 games, 11 days, I believe?
No,
Toronto,
I
Baltimore.
Will be back for – I'm missing on my vacation. I am missing Toronto, Baltimore, and Houston, but I will be in glorious Arlington on this coming Tuesday.
All right. Good to hear. And thanks for joining us during your vacation. And good scheduling there, Merck. You avoid that doubleheader in Baltimore. You know what you're doing, Merck. Veteran move right there. All right, that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition.